Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Crip Podcast. This is the podcast where me, Johnny,
and Victor
are interviewing and dissecting world-class performers and overall amazing people.
And goofy people, too.
Yeah, of course. But shit. Anyway, you know could what? You please tell us a little bit what person we're going to meet today?
This person was born with dysmelia, and he had to amputate his legs at the age of 1. But that didn't stop him from growing up and kickstarting a career in alpine paraskiing. At the age 15, he participated in his first Paralympics, making him the youngest Swede ever to make it into the Paralympian program. He's a rising star in the tech community, and we are absolutely stoked to have him on the show. Please welcome Simon Riseberg.
So my name is Simon Riseberg, and I am a double above knee amputee who has studied 3 years bachelor's in informatics, which is basically a light version of IT, and 2 more years master's in entrepreneurship and business design. Currently, I am working as a software developer as a part of a trainee program at one of the biggest IT consultancy firms in the Nordics called Evry. You work as a business analyst for 3 months, then you work as a tester for 3 months, and now I am working as a software developer.
All right.
That sounds super exciting.
Yeah, it is. And it is, because you kind of get this kind of overview of the whole cycle when it comes to systems development, because yeah. You get a bigger understanding of how everything is interconnected in a sense, and that is something that I'm really grateful to be a part of.
Tell us a little bit more about your background. What actually got you started in this interest of tech?
Yeah, so basically it runs in the family, and my mom is a business manager in IT systems at Chalmers, and my dad works in a startup as an internet service provider. He's a CTO there, so that's very interesting. And very early on, I actually got my first Mac. I think I was like 3 to 4 years old, and I started, first off, I actually just played games, and I was still interested in computer as such, but I actually didn't start programming until I was 18, because when I went to high school, I actually went for economics. So I was very focused on studying economics at the university as well. But then when the time came, when I actually got to finally make my choice, I was basically like, do I really like crunching numbers all day? And then the answer was actually no. And then I kind of got a little bit of panic. I didn't really know what to do. And then my both parents also studied informatics when they were my age. So they were like, yeah, shouldn't you give it a try? I was like, yeah, why not? And then I gave it a try, and then I actually loved it.
Has the disability affected you in any way, how you think about things in life?
I mean, like, I think that every crip in the world has been there at some part of their life. But my personality is that I'm very, very forward on everything, and I'm very forward thinking. I've never let anything get me down, and actually my confidence was raised pretty significantly in 2014, because then I got my first stubbies. It's like small prosthetics that I have. And when I got the feeling of walking a little bit, I actually felt more empowered in a way. But then again, I've always been forward thinking before I got them.
Yeah.
Is there something painful with the things that you do? Do you feel that, do you have any pains in life? Or
I don't want to sound like that, but I don't really feel that I have a lot of struggle in life. No? I feel pretty pleasant about myself, and that is because I always go in with the view that the world almost never adapts you, right? And that means that you have to adapt to the world. And everything I do all the time is me trying to adapt to the world in different ways. And an example of that, you know, me starting to walk with prosthetics, even me trying to get as light wheelchair as possible so I can move around easily and stuff like that, right? And I always think about, you know, location, especially now when I moved and stuff like that. So I try to minimize the struggle for myself as much as possible. And I think that is in every individual's right to actually try to do so, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially since you say that the world doesn't owe you anything, like
never.
So you have to take what you have and make the best of it, and change. You're the only person responsible for changing stuff. So that's great to hear. Yeah.
I think that's a good mentality to have, especially in our situation, so to speak. Sort of turn whatever weakness you have into a strength, and look for possibilities instead. And obviously, you have done a lot of discoveries lately in the prosthetic field. I've seen your posts on Instagram, on Facebook, and you now tried a running pair or whatever you call them.
Yeah, I actually got lucky to get blades. About a month ago, I got to try them on for 2 weeks, and then I had to wait for my own. And they actually arrived last week, so now I'm out running after work, and that's pretty liberating in a sense. And that is actually something I want to bring up while we're in this podcast, because depending on where in Sweden you live, it's hard to get different handicap equipment, right? Yeah. So in the Stockholm area, it's much easier to get in Gothenburg, because I've been struggling for so long to get these running legs, these blades, and I haven't gotten them. And then when I moved to Stockholm, I just went in and was like, is it possible to get these blades? And he was like, yes, of course. I was like, what?
Why do you think it's so, though? Why do you think it differs so much?
I think it comes down to this e-solution. I have my doubts, but I think it's like this. So basically, all the different companies are relocating to Stockholm, right? They're moving. The urbanization is bigger than ever, right? And I think, like, because these companies are relocating to Stockholm, there is more people working in Stockholm, and that brings in more taxes.
Do you think you can utilize the fact that you're getting cooler equipment and better equipment for you in your professional life? Could it be maybe not an image thing, but could it be something that can empower you maybe visually, but in other aspects as well in the stuff that you do?
I actually think it can help me with three parts. So the first, and you said that it didn't do something with my image, but it actually does. I believe so. The second one, as you said as well, the empowerment.
Yeah.
And the third one is actually physical. Because based on it, because sometimes when I go to customers, I actually have like long bionic legs as well. So we talked about blades, right? And we talked about stubbies. Those are my short legs. But then I also have regular legs that are kind of have microprocessors in every knee. So it feels like when I'm walking, if I'm about to fall, they kind of save me in a sense, right?
Oh.
And I've been using those for the past weeks now, because I actually changed customer in my consultancy firm who I work for. And and when you go into their office, you have this, like, what do you call this door that goes around like this?
The swivel door or something?
Yeah, the swivel door. Yeah. And their swivel door is very, 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 very thin. So you can't get in through it in a wheelchair.
Oh, so
the first time I went there, I came there with the colleagues, and it was like early in the morning, it was like 8 o'clock. Mm. And then they were like, yeah, Simon, are you sure you're supposed to go in there? I was like, yeah, but what the heck, I can try. So I went in there, but then my back wheel got caught in the actual swirl door.
Yeah, so
I couldn't get forward or backwards. So what I had to do was, like, I used my arm strength to go up on the wheelchair, and then I jumped out of the wheelchair, stood on my stubs, and tried to drag it back. But the more I was dragging it, the harder the door pushed. So they had to call security that came and get the wheelchair out.
Yeah.
And my colleague was pretty chill about it. He was like, it's okay, Simon, I've called security. I was like, shit. So after that, I always use my long legs when I go to that specific customer. And lucky for me, it's only one day a week.
Okay.
All right. But you said that they have a sensor that tells you if you're about to fall. How does that work?
So based on, you know, the gyro function in the phone that basically tells you where they have something specific, not quite the same technology, of course, but something specific. And that actually feels if your body's up straight, if it's like forward leaning, backward leaning, or something like that. So if it's very forward or very backwards, they kind of freeze in a sense, so you actually can stand on them without the legs bending.
So you've settled in Stockholm, and you work now at Evry for a little bit, and you're trying different fields within IT. You said you were trying testing being one of them, and you've been at different clients. Are you putting together some sort of personal development list for yourself, like professionally wise, or what's your ambitions, like short term ambitions now? I mean, you're obviously very driven, a very driven personality. So.
Yes. So first of all, I really want to become a developer. Based on these three different roles that I've been in, I like the developer role the most. Because right now in this time that we live in, it's you can scale things up pretty fast if you're a good developer, and it's easy to create something. The problem with me is that I don't really know what I want to create. But based on your question, like what I want to do in the future, I want to create something that helps the world together with friends that I like, that I won't stab me in the back and stuff like that. Yeah. Because based on my master's education, the entrepreneurship one, it's easy to get stabbed in the back, right? Mm. So it's very, you need to know who you're working with. And the thing that I want to create is something, I wanted to create a dent in the universe, kind of, to go back to what Steve Jobs said, let's create a dent in the universe. But I don't really feel that I have to get something out of it from an economical perspective. As long as it's something that helps other people and I do it together with friends, I would be happy with that, because I've always been soft-hearted for social entrepreneurship, you know, entrepreneurial stuff that helps people who are in need of something specific.
But so, and also on the side of things, one thing I sort of read up about you was that you, at some point, I don't know exactly when, you received a scholarship, right?
Yes, so it was when I was writing my master's thesis. I actually received a scholarship from Google, who was working together with a company called Udacity, which is basically an e-learning company, I would call them. Mm-hmm. So it was an Android nano degree that it's called. They call them, it's like their version of a bachelor's degree, but much shorter. So you kind of do it for 1 year. So you create all these different Android apps to learn the Google language. I don't know what it's called now. I lost it.
Dart?
No. I don't remember.
Which Google? Google Lang?
No. It's based to create Android apps, not Java.
Oh, the Android apps. Kotlin.
Yeah, Kotlin. Yes. Yeah, exactly. So I programmed that for a year, and that was pretty hard because I was writing a master thesis about algorithms while programming. Yeah. And it wasn't like, oh, you can spend 1 hour a week. It was basically, you need to spend at least 20 hours a week. And that was tough. Wow. I barely slept.
Yeah. Do you have any role models?
Yes. I have one big role model, actually. And it was actually the guy who got me into prosthetics in 2014. So it's a biomechanics professor on MIT in Massachusetts in Boston, called Hugh Herr, and he actually created the first bionic leg that actually listens to your thoughts. So he lost his legs when he was climbing several years ago, and by mistake I actually stumbled upon his TED talk on Christmas in 2013.
Okay.
And then I was like, I need to learn to walk in order to get those legs. And I actually want to meet him because he is such an inspiration to me. He's very, very cool. So basically, they actually have like these cords that they connect to your actual leg.
Okay.
So when you move different muscles, it actually feels the specific muscles that you move. And then it kind of regenerates that movement in the legs.
Yeah. All
right. It's pretty cool. So you could basically think like, yeah, I want to lift I want to wrinkle my left foot. And then it does that because as long as you have the nerves and the muscles in your thighs, it feels them, how they're moving.
Cool.
So it's pretty insane. It's pretty next level.
Do you feel like there's a possibility in the future that people with disability, no matter what disability, will get better aid?
I don't want to sound too dark, but based on what I've seen in public opinion, also politicians, I don't really feel that they get the drift because I get the feeling that they don't understand, for example, the value of social economics, right? So, I mean, like, if I wouldn't have my legs in order that allows me to walk and build up muscles and get healthier over time, I would be like in a hospital bed, yes. And that costs the states a lot more money in the long run than actually giving me those things or giving us those, yes, things. And I think you need people in politics, you know, like David Liege that drags this forward.
Yeah. That has that perspective in life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because I don't blame the politicians in that sense. Don't misinterpret me, because, I mean, I, for example, would not understand what a blind person needs because I've never been blind. So, you know, like, it's hard to overlook that. And that's why it's so important to have that representative people in the politicians and in, yeah, these high different workplaces, right?
And I think it's the same with personal assistants, that many people are getting less and less hours for their personal assistants here in Sweden. And that mainly is that, as you say, if it wasn't for that, we would stay at home or at the hospital. And it would cost a lot more than me working 100% with 100% personal care. So in that sense, we're creating jobs for other people and we can actually go to work. So the social economics in that sense doesn't really work.
Yeah, and based on that, you pay tax as well, exactly, based on the work you do. So the money, in a sense, goes back to the state.
But how can we turn that? Do you, like, if we think a little bit foolish, obviously you've identified these problems, we all have, and they are big problems for our development and for the society as well. Is there anything particular that we can do as individuals, or that you perhaps have been thinking about? Maybe I can contribute with this.
Yeah, I think this is a good start, the podcast, for example, Crippin Tech, because I think initiatives like this is a good way to sway public opinion and the general picture of how wheelchair users actually are, right?
Exactly.
So show them that, yes, we contribute to society if we actually get the handicap equipment that helps us do it, right?
Exactly.
And that will go back to the state or the government again. I think that is the most important thing to get out there, and not, you know, just show like, yes, I am really good at this sport, but basically, you know, show that I can really, really, really contribute to society.
We want to bring this podcast and YouTube channel to a place where we can tell everyone how it is and to live this life. And I think that many people out there are thinking that someday it will change. It's great that we actually go out there and show that you have to do it yourself for be able to make a change.
And get the right people on board, approach them, educate them, yeah, help them to think a little bit further, and tell them about our needs in order to become creative. Obviously, we want to enable people. We want to enable Crips, and we're in a time now. Well, the timing couldn't be better, yeah, I think. And you see a lot of companies these days that are pushing a little bit towards this direction. You've seen a lot of big U.S. enterprise firms they're hiring diversity and inclusion managers. They are trying to make it more common, more regular to see a wheelie in the office landscape, or a wheeler in the office landscape, or someone with a disability, and that's a good thing. I see it a little bit here also. Maybe we don't have those specific roles in Sweden. Some, well, Microsoft and those big firms do have it, but in the like mid-sized company level, we still don't. But of course, in the best of worlds, a role like that wouldn't be needed. But it's a good start to see these folks popping up.
Definitely.
Yeah, exactly. Because as you said there in the end, like in the best of worlds, they wouldn't need it. Because I'm not really a fan of, you know, inclusion managers. Because when you have an inclusion manager, you send out the message, hey, there is a person or several persons that needs to be included. And that is like, why does it have, yeah, to be like that, right?
Right?
And that is, and I understand you're thinking like, it's hard to sway that a public opinion right now, and maybe it's a good start, but then you will get stuck in the problem of getting out of there when you started, right? But I understand it, and I'm not really a big fan of these like different diversity initiatives in that way. I understand that they're good for public as well, but it shouldn't have to be like that. Like, it shouldn't people have to would be need like that. To need to understand, like, you know, it doesn't matter if you're have darker skin, if you have lighter skin, if you're a girl, if you're a boy, like, if you have different sexuality, it's like, if you're in a wheelchair, it doesn't have to matter at all, like.
In media, and maybe, like, take Swedish media, for instance, the TV networks and so forth, we've seen some shows popping up during the last couple of years or so, oftentimes involving people with disabilities and focusing on sports. You were mentioning it before. It's a way to become successful in the disability communities to do sports and maybe participate in Paralympics, which you have done, actually, in the past, which is very cool. But how do you see, how can media, Swedish media, push this in the right direction, you feel? Do you think they should continue on the same path, or can they do something a little bit differently?
I think Swedish media should try to put people in a wheelchair or with some type of disability in regular, you know, regular different TV shows, for example. We had this, I don't know who the girl was, I think her name was Lovisa, and she was actually a pro. She was like programledare, how do you say that? She was a like TV host,
TV host, yes.
At the Swedish children program Bolibompa.
Yeah, and I think she still is, right?
Isn't yeah, maybe she still is. Yeah. And that's a perfect example on how you should do it. Just put us in there, us.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just put people with disabilities in there. Because, I mean, like, you shouldn't have a specific program saying, like, yeah, here's a person with a disability. They're doing regular work. Congratulations,
no,
because
exactly.
Then you do it into something special, and it shouldn't be something special. That's the kind of mountain I want to leap over, right? You have to go over there and just, you don't have to talk about it, you just have to think about it's nothing different.
How do you define success?
I would say that I would see success as something subjective, actually, because I think right now in general people are very focused on what other people think about their achievements and stuff like that, and I think that you are successful when you are happy with what you're doing and can keep doing it. That's what I think is the most important, how you define successful, right? It can be something, you know, like people, or there can be different levels of successful, right? So if we play with the thought that I have a very big stress level, right? If I get to manage that stress every day, then I call that successful.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, right. There are different levels of being successful, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I think successful is, doing something and achieving something that makes you happy.
And one thing that struck me from the beginning, meeting you at the first time, Simon, that was actually at our floorball practice here, wheelchair floorball practice here in Stockholm. Okay. It was joining I guess a month or two after you relocated to Stockholm, showed up, and one thing that struck me was your positivity. You were very outgoing, very positive, and that's a great thing. And that kind of triggered me directly, and obviously that's very much connected with feeling success, feeling happy. But could you possibly have a bad day at times? And what would that look like, and how would you turn that around? Because I'm sure you do it like that.
Yeah, I mean, like, you have to work with it a lot in order to be able to turn these bad days into good days, right? Mm. But I think I have bad days, of course. Everyone has bad days. But I think in the end, like, you have to be able to have a bad day. You have to let yourself have a bad day.
Yeah.
I don't think it's realistic to, like, you switch a bad day to a good day every day, right? So when I have a bad day, I usually do something that I really love. For example, I go out and bike. I go play floorball with you. I play games, or I sit and program. And I think that is a way for me, at least, to recharge my batteries. And maybe someone else has something else that they like to do.
Is there a final destination?
If you would have asked me that like 6 or 7 years ago, I would be like, yeah, I want to go to Silicon Valley and, you know, make millions of dollars every day in a startup and, you know, just drink Jolt Cola in the office. But now I'm older and hopefully wiser. Yeah. And I think that my final destination isn't a physical space. I think my final destination is a mental space. And I think it's important to get closure on yourself in the sense that, you know, you need to understand that it's important to do something that you really like together with people that you do like.
Yeah.
And that, I think, will be my final destination, doing something that I like, that matters to the world, together with people I like. But I actually want to try to create a company before I do something else, because I want to see how it feels to, you know, be in charge in a sense. But I think I want to gather some... what do you call it? Some... I lost the word. Some... experience, sorry. Yeah. There it is. Some experience, especially in development.
Yeah.
You're talking a lot about people, working together with people that you like, that you feel inspired of. If you are to start a company, how important would work culture be for you? And would you do anything in that space, anything in particular?
I would say that work culture is actually one of the top tiers that I want in my company, if I would create one, because I want to nurture the type of culture when people help each other instead of, you know, kind of being the rivals inside their own company. Like, I think, and right now at my current department, we have that kind of culture, and I love going to work. I mean, like, you're spending minimum 40 hours a week at your company, and it needs to be a good place to be.
Of course.
And I want to nurture a culture when we are basically friends in the company and help each other out if we're stuck on an assignment or something like that.
So, Simon, I just have one last question. Is there anything you would like to say to an individual with a type of physical disability that wants to perhaps do something with their life other than, you know, just do something with their life, maybe join the IT sector? Can you say something? Do you have any pro tip to this person?
Yeah, if we're not being age specific in that sense, I mean, like, first of all, it's very, very simple. Never let your disability hold you back. Yep. I think that if you want to do something, just go out and do it, right? The worst thing that can happen is that you fail, but it doesn't matter how much you fail as long as you learn something out of it.
Exactly.
That is the most important. I have failed several times, and I will probably fail more times in life, but it's important to go for what you really want to do.
I think that wraps it up.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Simon.
And if you want to listen to this podcast, you can do it anywhere, actually, on Spotify or iTunes. Otherwise, you can go to anchor.fm/grip. We want to thank AMF Fastigheter and Anna Adamsson for lending us this awesome office space to record us. So a huge thank to Anna.
Thank you, Anna.
And AMF.